Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to CJ Evolution Podcast. This is episode 218. I am Pat Fitzgibbons. I'm the host and creator of this great and growing podcast, growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for sharing it with your family and friends. If you head over to iTunes and rate and review my podcast, I sure would appreciate it. You'll find a link on cjevolution.com. Thank you so much for the continued support. I'm so excited, like I've said before, about Four Sigmatic. They are a partner with CJ Evolution, and their products are amazing. As a matter of fact, I just ordered some more mushroom coffee. Yes, mushroom coffee. It's great tasting, and yes, it's good for you too. So if you go to the CJ Evolution website, cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. You'll get 15% off of all your products that you order using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, we have so many guests on the show. I'm so blessed to have the guests that I have on, and most of them talk about some sort of self-improvement, what you're going to do after your career, because we're all going to leave our career at some point, folks, whatever you're doing in the criminal justice field. My next guest is a rock star. I told him that. He is managing to do it all, have a very successful law enforcement career, as well as he's an entrepreneur to the 10th degree. This guy is the man. You're going to love this next guest. Get a pad and paper out, take some notes, because he can teach you a lot. Enjoy, folks. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am super excited to have Aaron Keith Hawkins on the show. If you don't know who he is, you got to get to know this guy. He's the host of the Unbreakable Success Podcast. Aaron's a high-performance coach who loves working with entrepreneurs and those looking to create a powerful impact with their business and life. And best of all, Aaron is a full-time law enforcement officer. Welcome, Aaron. Thank you for being here, sir.
Pat, thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it, and I'm truly honored to join you on the show. This is exciting.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit off the air, and you've been doing it. It's kind of weird, the similarities. We've both been doing it at the same time, about 22 years, and thank you for your service, sir.
Likewise.
And if I did I miss anything in the intro right there?
No, nah, that's enough. We'll go bit by bit. I don't want to overwhelm anybody. We're all friends here.
Now, did you always want to be a law enforcement officer?
You know, it's funny. Probably a short answer is no. But as I got out of college, and you know, a buddy of mine, his dad was a CO. Mm-hmm. So through junior high and high school, we were kind of enamored by the uniform and, you know, carrying a gun off duty and all that kind of the cool stuff that you look at when you're in 8th, 9th, 10th grade. So by the time we became young adults, we, you know, a few of us as friends, we grew up together, we took the plunge, and we all wound up spending a couple of decades just doing all kinds of crazy stuff in this profession. It's been a blast.
And you're currently a captain, a police captain.
Yes.
In an organization in New Jersey. What do you think, Aaron, kind of changing gears a little bit? I mean, what do you think some of the problems or issues are in law enforcement today? And you know, there's a lot of, you've seen it, Aaron, the same as I. I mean, we kind of go through these, you know, peaks and valleys. And what do you think the biggest problem facing law enforcement is right now?
Oh, the biggest problem. Well, I can take the liberty, I'll reframe them as challenges. I think I think one of the biggest challenges still is definitely the perception. And it comes from a lot of things. On one end, there's a, you know, I speak very candidly when I say our this country has its baggage. Mm-hmm. So we have real issues this country has been dealing with for the past couple hundred years, which sounds like a long time. But when you think of the age of a country, we're babies.
Oh, yeah, we are.
I mean, we are literally just learning to walk when you think of, you know, recorded history as a timeline. We are a very small segment of it. So we're going through growing pains, and we're trying to work our way out of some things. But and part of that in any culture, you know, something as important and as at the forefront as law enforcement, you're going to be at the spearhead of the growing pains. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think our biggest challenge is changing the perception of what American policing is. And I think part of it at the tip of that challenge is number one, media coverage. And I'm certain, I don't say that to blame media coverage. I'm talking about the reality of the fact that things that are conversation worthy will be watched, and there will be conversations about them. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with some things that are usually pretty conversation worthy, sure. whether they're good, bad, or somewhere in between. So we find ourselves in this position in this young country that has its cultural issues, to use a term lightly, mm-hmm. that we've made some massive headways with. But we're trying to get through these growing pains while everybody is watching.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting for somebody somewhere out of the, I don't know, what is it now, like 950,000 of us. They're just looking for one of us to make a mistake,
yeah.
and bash us for it. And then the rest of us kind of have to convince the rest of the country that that's not all of us. Yeah. And it's a challenge when you deal with anything that is a culture to be blamed for what someone else does because of the uniform you wear or the color of your skin or anything else. It can be frustrating. So, We have an image that we need to keep up, and it's not always easy.
Yeah, and I think, and I agree 100% with that. But I think maybe I'm just naive, but I think that a lot of people support law enforcement out there, and the overwhelming majority of people out there, you know, I don't care what your background is, they support law enforcement. I mean, and it's just that, you know, maybe small minority that seem to be pretty vocal, and we're not without fault too, Aaron. You know that we make mistakes all the time, and we need to own up to that, and we need to realize that, you know, we're not perfect, and you know we need to connect better with the community and things like that. Whenever something happens, I tell my guys, don't go back into your shell. You need to get out there.
Yeah.
That's the time to connect with the community.
Yeah.
And to get out there, start walking around, talking.
Yeah.
Are you going to connect with everybody? Probably not. But you just need to get out there and start talking with people.
Sure, sure. And I 100% agree with that. When something's going wrong, that is the time to be seen and talk.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about what you're doing on the side, because one of the things that I mean, you're a rock star, dude, because you are – no, I'm serious, because you are killing it on, you know, in your endeavors, your entrepreneurial endeavors, which – part of my podcast, Aaron, is I just don't talk shop cop talk all the time. I do to, you know, sometimes, but I want to. It's so important that I have guests like you on the show to talk about. Okay, I've done this, you know, honorable, you know, thing in law enforcement for 22, 23 years or 25, whatever, however long. Now I'm going to move on to the next phase of my life. And that's why I just really appreciate you coming on, because we're all going to do something after law enforcement. We're living longer, you know, we have side gigs, but can you tell us about what you're doing outside of law enforcement?
Yeah, you know, it's been crazy. We kind of chatted for a second before the show, and as you mentioned, I have my podcast, Unbreakable Success. I've been doing that since 2015, mm-hmm. On and off, and it even went through a name change, Evolution, already, if you believe that.
Are you serious?
I changed the name. It started out as, it was called Best Life of Your Life. Total different cover.
Cool.
Basically the same content,
yeah.
Same similar conversations, but I just went through some rebranding.
Nice.
To use an entrepreneurial word. It makes me cool, right? I've been doing a podcast. I got into coaching. So I coach one-on-one, mainly, usually wind up connecting with entrepreneurs in my coaching, because I just love that kind of creative spirit that a lot of crazy entrepreneurs have. I'm also an author now. I just wrote my first book a couple months ago. Yeah, that was exciting. Something I didn't expect to do this soon. I've been keynote speaking. I keep getting random phone calls to do keynotes, which is actually pretty cool.
I see a TED talk in your future, buddy.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't been pushing for it, because we were joking about earlier, the calendars just get crazy trying to keep all this stuff together, because I'm running a patrol division, which, mm-hmm. There's that. So
that's a small thing. That's a small thing.
Yeah, just that. You know, the guys and gals, they take care of themselves. They just want to know I'm around. They want to make sure I'm still answering the phone.
Exactly.
podcasting, coaching, authoring now. I hosted my first live event a few weeks ago here in Jersey. That was exciting. It was based loosely around the content of my book. So I had a live event that I hosted at a local local spot here in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. So yeah, just speaking and talking and sharing and really just collaborating with people and growing a network. It's That's been awesome. A load of fun.
Now, what was the catalyst? I mean, what was the, you know, did you just wake up one day and go, hey, I want to do this. I want to put myself out there, or what was the reason behind this?
This, well, there's two parts of that. Number one, even when I started my career when I was relatively young, I think I just turned 22. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I turned 22 in July. I got hired in August of 95. But even when I started, I always had this entrepreneurial bug. Like, I loved the job, loved the guys and the girls that I worked with, but I always wanted, you know, I always had this itch to do just something outside of the box. So I jumped from everything. I was into modeling, acting. I was on Law and Order as an extra a couple times.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Started a landscaping business. So I was always doing this. I was always itching for something in addition to this career that I truly enjoyed. I just wanted to have something else. Most of it was just for some excitement and for some money. But I had an incident in 2009 where I came home from work. I just made sergeant at that time. Came home from work, went to bed, woke up at 1:30 in the morning with some massive chest pain. Mm-hmm. So I'm laying on my side, open my eyes. The room is dark, and I realize I have my hand clutching my chest. And I got the pain radiating down my arm. It's like a 12 on the 1 to 10 scale. And I'm, you know, I was cross-trained. You know, we're all first responders here. So, yeah, I realized that I was having heart attack symptoms. So I sat myself up, and I'm trying to wake myself because, like I said, it's 1:30 in the morning. I'd been sleeping for hours at that point. And I did what seemed to make sense at the time. I stood up and I tried to walk it off. So, and within a few seconds, I realized, you know, this is bad. Like, this is really, really not good. And in an instant, I realized that I had a decision to make, because at the time our daughter was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. She's sleeping in her bedroom down the hall. My wife's sleeping next to me. And it suddenly dawned on me that if I didn't make it and if I didn't wake anybody up, they might find me in the morning. Mm-hmm. Just gone. Yeah. So that freaked me out. So as much as I didn't want to, I woke my wife up and she jumped out of her sleep and she looked at me and she said, "What's going on?" I said, "Baby, you got to call 911. I think I'm having a heart attack." Mm-hmm. And her eyes just opened up like saucers. And she said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah, you got to call." So as soon as she dialed, it felt like there was this big knob on my back that had the big energy label on it. Mm-hmm. And my energy, it felt like somebody was turning my energy down. And I just collapsed at the foot of the bed.
Oh, geez.
The ambulance comes. They checked me out. I had facial droop on one side. I wound up getting taken to the hospital and spent a couple days there. Fortunately, I didn't have a heart attack. But they think I had a TIA. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't really confirm that, but they think I did because of the facial droop.
Yeah,
and
some droop, yeah.
Yeah. And what was interesting to answer the question of this that being the catalyst, it wasn't that it just happened. It was the fact that when I sat there, because when I collapsed on the bed, at the foot of the bed, I couldn't move. I could only hear like muffled sounds, and my vision was closing down to like a point. And if somebody would have told me that was going to happen to me a couple days ahead of time, I would have been scared. Like, I would have been afraid of dying. Mm-hmm. But what was odd was that I didn't feel any fear when it happened. What I felt with it was this overwhelming sense of regret. I suddenly had this regret that I had just been kind of coasting. And I had, for some reason, I had these thoughts going through my head, like, this can't be it. Like, why wasn't I better husband, a better father, better peer, better friend? I suddenly felt this vacuum behind me, as if I had left so much undone. Not that I didn't get enough, it's that I felt like I hadn't given enough.
Yeah.
Not to be melodramatic, but there was so much opportunity that I, in that instant, I realized I had left on the table, and that freaked me out. Mm-hmm. And I had this, I mean, that regret, sense of regret that overcame me, really freaked me out. And that was a catalyst for me starting to do some things differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, I mean,
yeah,
that's one of the biggest things that people say that I've read, you know, that regret is the biggest thing at the end of a person's life, that,
sure,
you know, they should have took that chance. They should have done this. They should have wrote that book or put themselves out there. And
yep.
we you know, I was talking about this with another guest recently, but we live in the greatest time in the world right now, man. I mean,
sure.
I just believe that with I mean, look what we're doing right now. We're having a show mm-hmm. with technology. I mean, you're out there killing it with the help of technology and things that would be pretty hard to do 10, 15 years ago.
It's amazing.
It is truly amazing. But I'm glad you're okay, brother, and you're here.
Appreciate
it. And you're doing well. How do you manage? No, I'm serious. I mean, because we're in the same kind of boat right here, and I guess I know too. I mean, it's all a matter of time management. But it's you know, you juggle your entrepreneurial and your business success with your LA career. How do you do it?
I'll try to fire off a few things. Number one, my wife is a rock star. Mm-hmm. We've been married 20. This is 2018, right? See, now you're questioning the whole managing thing. I'm forgetting the year, never mind the day. This will be 23 years we've been married, and she's
congratulations.
Thank you. She's amazing. She's been the biggest supporter of every single crazy idea I come up with. She's like, yes, let's do it. And that
why
is
not? Why not?
yeah, it really is. And not only her, we have one daughter. She's 12 right now, but they are the biggest supporters. I can't imagine doing this, you know, any of this stuff without them.
Yeah.
The second is honestly just keeping my head on straight. Like you said, time management. Like I'm at work, and when I come home, you know, I make a couple hours every evening to catch up on emails or do a couple interviews. To write a little bit, depending on the day, I just make sure I set aside a block of time to do those things. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. You know, I just set aside the time to get these things done, and I love doing them, so it doesn't feel like a burden.
But I'm sure you have a vision of where you want to be. You know, and we talk a lot on the show about visualization and how it, you know, the more you visualize, that's important.
Yeah.
You got to visualize those things, you know, and where you want to be. I mean, it's so important. Tell us, go ahead, sir.
No, to your point to visualization, if I could say it, it is massively important. What has helped for me is, in addition to visualizing the end game and a big picture that you know, a lot of us have, is making sure I visualize the process. So in other words, you know, I want to be here, you know, doing these, you know, workshops or these live events or these keynote speeches or working with these clients. But making sure I visualize the process that it will take to get there. Like, what do I need to be doing on that day-to-day basis, to your point, to that time management point? How do I need to manage my time, and what do I need to make sure is getting done in that time to make those things possible? Because you know how it is, man. You're juggling the same thing I'm juggling. And there's so much that we could do, but really narrowing it down to doing the things that are going to make a difference,
exactly.
Which sometimes means not doing some things. Like, you know, some of the stuff that people claim that you have to be doing, like, you know, all the social media, and you need to have your 8 social media accounts going. I don't invest all my time in that because I have a limited amount of time, so I have to make sure I'm doing the other things. Like, I got to do my interviews. I got to, you know, I have to be on time for my appointments. I have to write. I have to answer emails. I have to network with actual people. So to me, some of the social media stuff that many entrepreneurs are really into is secondary for me, because that's not the 5% of things that make 95% of the impact. So it's a give and take.
So true. Now, you mentioned writing. Now, you tell us about your book, Million Dollar Influence, and where can they find it, listeners? And did you always want to write a book?
Yes.
That's a lot of questions.
I'm going to take, of course, being me, I'm going to take them out of order. Did I always want to write a book? Yes and no. I always knew I would at some point. I didn't expect to write one this soon. You can get to answer the second question. Where can you get it? It's on Amazon, but I would love to give your listeners a free copy. They can just get it on my website, AaronKeithHawkins.com/MDI. That's MDI for Million Dollar Influence. You get a free copy. You can just download it. But if you can get actual hard copy from Amazon, Million Dollar Influence. But the book is about. It's funny how the book came about. I created an online course that's named after my podcast called Unbreakable Success Academy, the premise of which was part of my coaching ideology, if you will, is the fact that usually when we start doing anything, whether it's a career or relationship, we usually have the best intentions in mind. We want to be a great employee. We want to be a great spouse, husband, friend, and inevitably things get in the way. And this online course I created, it came about because I realized that most of the time there's only a handful of things, big picture, that get in the way. It's usually something to do with emotions, fears, relationships, influence, goal achievement strategies. Mm-hmm. And the term unbreakable success comes from the idea that if we teach ourselves and we learn the skills to deal with those challenges, then we're pretty much unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Not that we won't have problems. It's just that those problems won't break us down and stop us. So anyway, when I created this course, it was very broad. It was long. It was like this 8-hour massive piece of content. It's insane. It's great stuff. I got great feedback on it, but it felt too broad for me. Uh-huh. So I got this itch to write a book, and I wasn't sure what to write it on. I didn't want to recreate what I had already done in the course. So I kind of stepped away from everything for like a month. Like, I did nothing. I didn't write anything. I didn't look at my course. I just went away, and I just kept doing interviews and fun stuff. When I came back to it, what I realized is that the majority of what I taught and was teaching was really at its core about influence. A, how we influence ourselves, and B, how we influence the other people in our lives. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty much a light bulb moment where I kind of smacked myself in the forehead and said, "Hey, knucklehead, you need to write a book about influence." And I did. In like a week and a half, I churned out this book. Yeah. It was insane. I had to get it out, and I got it done. Sent it to the editor. Had a couple people read it, and you know, people pretty much gave it the thumbs up. And I said, "Let's make a cover," and it's done.
Yeah. That's so awesome. That is awesome.
So, yeah, the book is pretty much in three parts. The first part's about a breakdown and a framework on human needs and human behavior. In other words, like what motivates us. The premise being, if we're going to know how to successfully, if we're going to be able to successfully influence other people, we have to know what's already influencing them. Mm-hmm. And that's where the research and stuff into human behavior and human motivation, that kind of thing, comes in. And that's the first third of the book. Second third of the book is about influence itself, the things to avoid and things to do. And then the last part of the book is about the long game, about relationship building. So that's the book in a nutshell.
That is awesome. And I'll have that linked up in the show notes where they can find your book on Amazon and your website. And you really said something that really, it all resonated, but you talked about people who, basically when they, because you're talking about failures. So basically when somebody fails or they get knocked down, they stay down. Most people, the truly successful people like you and other people, they get up and they keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Failure is inevitable. I'm usually looking for the next thing to fail at, so I can figure out where I need to adjust.
Yeah.
And that's really, really what it's about. It's not about becoming a perfectionist. It's just about becoming skilled. When you have a skill, whether it's, we're law enforcement, so it's marksmanship. If you're low left, it doesn't mean you holster up and call it a day.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to make your adjustments. You got to hone that skill. It's the same with relationships, influence, leadership, whatever it is. We have to be willing to hone those skills even when we miss the mark.
Now, I talk to a lot of people just like you do, and most people that I talk to, not all of them, but most successful people like you, Aaron, have some sort of morning routine.
Yeah.
Do you have a morning routine that you do, or would you be willing to share it?
Yeah. It's nothing overly complicated. It's pretty fun. I usually wake up in the morning. My wife's usually up about 15, 20 minutes before I am. So I usually wake up, text her a good morning. It's this weird thing. I text her good morning before I come downstairs and I'll literally text her good morning and she'll text me back. And then I'll be walking down the steps. It's just weird. But I'll talk to her for a few minutes. And then almost immediately, I do at least 10 minutes of meditation.
Yeah.
Throw on my headphones she has her own reading routine. I have my meditation routine.
Love meditation.
And by the way, man, you know, I hate to talk about meditation and gloss over it. It has been an absolute game changer.
Oh,
because you're talking about a 15-year SWAT guy. I was just a brick.
Yeah.
And the idea of me meditating, you know, 10 years ago was completely laughable. I mean, literally
I'm laughing because I'm the same way you are.
But it has,
you know, it's just a couple of years. It's really changed my life.
Here's why I explain it best to people. And tell me if you agree with this. I always tell people when we most need to be calm, people are usually scrambling to calm themselves down, especially in this profession. And we only get good at what we practice. So when things hit the fan and we need to be maintaining our composure, not getting overly angry, pissed off, excited, whatever the case may be, if we don't practice the art of being calm, our brains don't know how to get there quickly.
True.
And that's what gets us into trouble in life and in our careers and personal lives. So if nothing else, the act of teaching your mind what it feels like every single day, how to just completely be calm and relaxed, it's a muscle. You're exercising that. And in this profession, it's absolutely necessary. And I'm going to make a bold statement. If anybody's wearing a badge and they're not doing some sort of meditation, quiet, mindfulness, something, I don't care if it's just sitting in silence for 10 minutes a day with your eyes closed, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
It is a practice that we must have to be able to quickly switch to calm mode while the rest of the world is going nuts. It was a life changer for me.
Yeah. Well, and there's a reason why, Aaron, you know this, that the U.S. military and sports,
sure,
sports teams,
yep,
are engaging in some sort of mindfulness and meditation.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
this stuff, and it's so funny. I mean, exactly the way you are. A couple of years ago, you would have said meditation. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? I ain't doing that.
Yeah.
I'm a big guy, yeah, like you, and I'd be like, no, there's no way I'm doing that. But I tell you,
yeah,
what, I got, I don't know what you use. I use Calm, the app Calm, and Headspace. I'm a big fan of Headspace.
Yeah.
So I use that.
Yeah.
And like you said, 10 minutes a day, man, it sets the tone.
If you ever miss a day,
oh yeah, I do, and I can feel it, and I'm like, oh my god,
does it feel crazy?
Yeah, it feels weird, and I'm like, oh my god, I missed something. But this is the kind of stuff, Aaron, that I really wish. You know, I was visiting some of the troops today in the academy, and we have two people going to the academy we're sponsoring, and this is the kind of stuff. And I know they have to cover the curriculum, and I know that there's state standards and stuff like that, and it's jam packed. But I really wish that they would spend time. I think they're getting better, and I'm not saying they have to talk, you know, solely on meditation, but
sure,
I wish you would spend more time on how to take care of yourself better.
Yeah, it's a piece that needs to be there. I mean, to your point about it's coming along in this profession. When I was in Quantico in 2014, I went to FBI National Academy,
mm-hmm,
and they were teaching it there as part of the curriculum in the PT program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had all of us from all over the country were sitting around, and they had us doing these mindfulness routines.
Yeah.
And like you and I were laughing about, a bunch of us students there were looking around like, "What is this craziness?"
Yeah,
I thought we were here for, I thought we were here for PT.
Yeah, we were for PT.
But you know what? Across the board, everybody loved it. Because they'd never done it before, and once they did it, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, everybody's like, "Wow, that was."
Yeah.
Man, that was awesome.
And it's changed my life. Like, it's changed your life. I mean, I do the same thing as far as a routine. I, you know, I get up early in the morning, I go work out, I come back, I meditate. And like you, Aaron, I know when I don't, I can feel it. I get a little bit, you know, fidgety and stuff. And I try to journal when I, you know, is almost every day. I'll miss a day here and there. But I think mindfulness meditation is so, so important.
Yeah, and I totally got us off track. I apologize for
No. That's why I asked you, because, I mean, I was like, I wonder if Aaron likes meditation.
Yeah, absolutely love it. And it has changed the game for me in way too many ways to touch on just in this one episode. But talking to my wife meditating, and then always got to have some breakfast, either a shake or something like that.
Yeah.
Just have some conversation before I go to work.
Now, what are some tips before we wrap up? What are some advice and tips you'd give a budding entrepreneur out there?
Budding entrepreneur. I can think of four tips because it's something I do teach, and I'll rattle them off, and I'll use the acronym PURE. Four tips for a budding entrepreneur is this. Number one, you got to make the pivotal choice to be 100% responsible for everything.
Mm-hmm.
if your sales are horrible, you got to take responsibility for it. And when I say responsibility, I don't mean blame. I mean the literal translation of, if we break down the word responsible, the response just means you can respond with your thoughts, words, and actions. And the suffix, that IBLE, is from a Latin word that just means capable or worthy of. Mm-hmm. So when we take responsibility as entrepreneurs, or anyone else for that matter, it's just saying that we are worthy and capable of responding to whatever the situation is. That's mm-hmm. that's got to be number one. You got to own it, sure. because if you don't, you're just going to fall apart. Yeah. Second thing I would say is unconditionally high standards. You got to have high standards. And when I use the word unconditional, because one of my first parlays into this whole personal development world was through Tony Robbins, which I'm sure you heard of. one of the first things I learned from him, because when I had that incident I mentioned in 2009, that was my mm-hmm. first introduction into, I'd never read a self-help book in my life yeah. up until that incident. But one of the biggest things I learned, one of the first things I learned was him talking about, if you want to change your life, you got to change the quality of your standards, which I found to be massively helpful. But one thing I was noticing over the years is that there's a lot of really great people that set these high standards, but they're conditional, meaning they'll hold those standards until something goes wrong, mm-hmm. till they're angry, till they have an excuse to do something less. Mm-hmm. But in those moments where we have an excuse to do or be something less, those are the actual moments where you need your standards the most.
Yeah.
So I always encourage entrepreneurs, like in the moment you think you have an excuse to drop the ball or do something less because, mm-hmm. you know, he or she or it didn't go your way, that's where you need to hold the bar for yourself at the highest.
Yeah,
the third thing would be only compare yourself to you. I use this little term called reflective comparison, which means simply, if you look in a mirror at your own reflection, just ask yourself the question, what would the best version of me do right now? Mm-hmm. As an entrepreneur, I think that's essential, because it's so easy to look around at whoever else is doing what or claiming to make what money or doing these big things. And it can be really easy to feel smaller than you really are. Mm-hmm. But if you really keep the focus of asking yourself, what would the best me do right now? If I didn't have the ego or the baggage or the worry or all the fears yeah. and all that stuff, what would I do? What would yeah. be my next decision? That keeps things really simple,
sure.
and it keeps you from getting off course. And the last thing is just to create. I like to call it elevate your situational method, meaning most of the time when any of us are faced with a situation, whether we're in business or on the street, we do one of four things. We either do what's familiar, we hope, we believe, or we create something out of it. And as entrepreneurs, it's really essential to get creative
yeah.
so that when you're holding that bag of what seems like a real bag of, I'll save your show the expletive, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know
when
what you mean.
When things are really going bad, those are the moments that you really need to create something out of that situation.
Yeah.
So focusing on what you can create out of a situation as opposed to focusing on what the situation looks like, that's what keeps you going, and that's what really allows you to make some massive gains. So those are my four little yeah. tips for some budding entrepreneurs, that's, and they've yeah. been helpful.
That's awesome. And hope is no strategy, folks.
It's
not a strategy. You got to back it up with action, man. If you want to yeah. do something, you got to take that step forward.
And we've all been there. We know hope can be a great thing. It can sustain you when you think
sure.
that's all you have. But you're right, man. Sometimes we can find ourselves hoping when we can be acting.
Well, it's
okay to do both.
And I'm sure you've been through this, Aaron. You're like, I mean, people ask me sometimes. They're like, well, you know, how did you start the podcast? I mean, how did you do this? And you've heard this before, probably. Once mm-hmm. you figure out the why,
yeah,
the how's going to come.
Sure. Sure. Yep. Right. You got to run out of fear. It's funny. It real quick, because I know we got to wrap this up, but somebody asked me probably a month ago now, this great guy, Mario Perucci. He's got a great podcast called 10 Minute Mindset. And he was really serious. He asked me, he said, so, you know, how did you get from where you were to what you're doing now? And I thought about it for a second. I said, you know what, Mario? I just kept doing stuff that scared the freaking hell out of me. I just did. Like starting a website scared the hell out of me. Starting a podcast scared me. Getting a first coaching client, writing a book, like all of it, getting on a stage and doing a keynote somewhere when I had never done one before scared the heck out of me. But I just kept doing that stuff that scared me. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't easy, but after a while, the strategy became simple.
Yeah.
If it feels like the right thing to do and it's scary, got to do it.
Yeah. Well, Aaron Keith Hawkins, thank you so much, sir, for taking time to join us on the podcast today. Again, you're a rock star, man. Thank you for your service in law enforcement. Much success to your business and your podcast. And again, thank you for coming on today, sir.
Thank you, Pat, and the feeling is mutual. Thank you for your service and keeping your community safe out there, and thank you for being a difference maker with the show and bringing on great guests and giving out some great content to help all of us doing this job stay strong mentally and physically. So I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.